Eagles Entertainment.
With the 10th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast.
Welcome to the Journey to the Draft podcast. I'm your host, Fran Duffy, and we've got a fun show today. We've got pick six with Greg Cosell, six players. We're going to go all defense today. Defensive line, linebacker, safety, two players from each spot, six guys total with Greg. After that, we've got Draft Buzz, where Ben Fennell and I, we're going to go through some discount players that you can get a little bit later in the draft that have a round one counterpart. So we'll cover that. Also, a really interesting mock draft from Lance Zierlein from NFL Media. We'll cover that there in Draft Buzz. Then we've got Draft Mailbag, one question from you at home that we will get to. And again, the best way to reach us, head on over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you listen to the show. Leave us a question there in the comment box, and we will answer it here in an upcoming segment. That said, let's get to pick six. It's time to catch up with Greg Cosell.
Now it's time for pick six.
All right, here for another edition of Pick Six, my friend Greg Cosell. You can follow him on Twitter at Greg Cosell. Check his work out over with NFL Films. And Greg, I know you have all your scouting reports this year available over with the 33rd team, so everybody can go check those out as well. Talk through some of these players that I know that you've covered over there on that site. And we'll start at the defensive tackle position. Two guys that are in the round one consideration towards the back end of round one. We're going to start first with Pittsburgh defensive tackle Kalijah Kancey, one of a handful of players that you and I have discussed in this segment, Greg, here this spring, that is a little bit of a physical outlier because of his size, and that's going to be the big knock on Kalijah Kancey. Is we haven't really seen anybody in this current NFL right now playing at that size. I'm pulling up his exact measurements as we speak here, but I think when you look at Kalijah Kancey, 6'1", 281 pounds, just about 30 and a half inch arms. I mean, that's a very short, slight, compact frame. Geno Atkins, Grady Jarrett, like those guys were top end players within the last decade or so, but even they were a little bit bigger. So what are your thoughts on Kalijah Kancey and how he projects to the league?
Where does Ed Oliver fit into that? Do you know?
I could tell you. Give me one sec and I'll pull it up while you talk.
Because I think Oliver is similar in terms of weight for sure. I don't know, for instance, what Oliver's arm length is offhand. But he's certainly similar with his weight. And Oliver ended up being a top 10 pick in a draft, if memory serves me correctly.
He was the eighth pick, by Buffalo, yes.
Yeah.
All right, so Oliver, he came in at 281 pounds, which is the exact same weight.
Yeah.
9 1/4 inch hands, same hand size, 31 6/8. So he was about an inch longer arm length.
Right.
And
40 time was five, close. I think he was a 4.73, and Kancey's a 4.67.
Right. Yep. Exactly. So this kid was a little bit more explosive, a little bit more. A little bit more better long speed.
I mean, I don't think there's a lot of mystery to Kancey, Fran. I mean, if you're 281 pounds and you're being talked about as a relatively high draft choice, first round or day two for sure. So what must your game be built on? It must be built on quickness, suddenness, and explosiveness. And there's no question that's what shows up on tape. I mean, this guy has tremendous first-step acceleration. He's an explosive athlete. He's got great contact balance. He's got what we like to call reactive athleticism.
Yep.
He almost looks like a running back when playing defensive tackle. And you know what was what I thought was really interesting, and I don't know your feeling about this, but I thought he was able to generate, and maybe it's because he had a low center of gravity and could play with leverage, but I thought that he really generated strength and power in a small, confined area. I mean, I didn't think he was, a light guy who just got moved. In fact, I actually thought he did a pretty good job taking on double teams and stalemating them and at times beating them. Now, there's no question, as you said, and you're 100% right, that some teams will see him as an exception and an outlier and may not even have them on their board, maybe as a fourth or fifth round pick. But he just looks different. He's a very, very explosive athlete.
He's a fireball inside. There's no question. Yeah. I mean, the force that he generates coming off the ball, his disruptive ability. You look at all the analytics stuff from PFF and all the win rate stuff, all extremely, extremely high, extremely impressive from that standpoint. I guess the question then becomes is he going to be limited in terms of role and deployment? Is he a guy that you're only going to be able to play on pass downs? You get into those speed packages, and that's where he comes on the field, where teams typically will kick a defensive end inside. Instead, it's all right, let's do the line change, and Kancey comes out. Or does he have that ability to be a three down player at 281 pounds
and
on
that's,
the
side? That, Ed Oliver's a three down player, and he's nowhere near the pass rusher that Kancey is, and he wasn't even when he came out of Houston, as you recall. My final line in my transition was, there is no question Kancey is an exception and an outlier, but the tape does not lie. And he is a sudden, explosive athlete with pass rush traits who will begin his NFL career as a sub-front D lineman who can line up in multiple positions from one technique out to wide nine, depending on how a team structures its front. I mean, the guy is an explosive pass rusher. So he's going to play. Now, whether that means he plays 40 snaps or 20 snaps, I think that will be team-specific, scheme-specific, but he looks different. This guy is an explosive, sudden mover.
It's funny, you went to Oliver. I want to ask you about Oliver in a second. The other name that I wrote down this summer while watching him is a little bit under the radar, but obviously you know who this player is, but our listeners may not be aware. Adam Butler was a day three pick by the New England Patriots a few years back, coming out of Vanderbilt. He's played in the league. He got a second contract with Miami, was kind of like a sub pack. He played in that dime package for New England for a few years as that nose tackle head up over the center. He is a small, undersized, disruptive player. But real quick, in terms of Ed Oliver, you mentioned like he's a three down player. Do you view how far has Ed Oliver come? You watch him a lot more than I do with the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, I think the concern with Oliver, and it's why I would bet that Buffalo is having a tough decision as to whether to offer him a second contract, Fran, is because he's not a pass rusher. And that's the issue. That's one thing we know Kancey is. Well, he hasn't played in the NFL, obviously, Kancey, but Kancey is a pass rusher. We know that. And he will be at the next level, too. I mean, the stress and that he put on particularly interior offensive linemen, they could not match him. I ended up watching a lot of games because I enjoyed watching him, in addition to watching all of his tackles for loss, all of his quarterback sacks, in addition, as I said, to a number of games. And, these offensive linemen just could not match him off the ball. And I think that's the difference. I'm not going to start getting into the Aaron Donald stuff. That's silly at this point in time. I know some people have sort of made that comparison. I'm not going there. But Oliver is just not a good pass rusher overall. And I think that's going to be the difference.
Well, let's go to another defensive tackle that's being talked about in the latter stages of round one, and that's Mazi Smith from Michigan. Now, with Mazi Smith, you have the body type, 6'3", over 320 pounds, nearly 34-inch arms. I mean, he looks the part of an NFL interior defensive lineman. Unlike Kalijah Kancey, the production, the efficiency, the disruption, just not there as often. He's got, less than a sack, 0.5 sacks over the course of his career. All of those win rate metrics that I referenced earlier with Kancey, that has not been the case with Mazi Smith. Now, a lot of that has to come down to like scheme and deployment and what he's asked to do. But I want to get your thoughts now on Mazi Smith, the D tackle from Maryland, and how you view him moving forward to the NFL.
Yeah, and with some D tackles, as you know, they don't necessarily have stats. Some do, some don't. And I always find that interesting. And, when you watch tape, sometimes you don't know why. Because this guy, he's kind of a freak. I mean, you could make the argument that there's not another D tackle, including Jalen Carter, in this draft with the size, mass, live feet, and short area explosiveness of Smith. Because he weighs 25 pounds more than Jalen Carter. So, his good plays are ridiculously good. He's got a tremendous combination of size, athleticism. His feet are light. They're quick. If you're just talking traits, Fran, there's almost nothing not to like about Mazi Smith. Mm-hmm. Again, it's always hard to know the answer to what you just said. So, that would require a deeper dive, which you and I can't do, in terms of talking to the player, probably spending time with his coaches and others. I think that that's That's what you have to try to figure out. But there's no question when you just look at the traits of this player, I mean, they're ridiculous. I mean, his arm length is almost 34 inches. You know, there's nothing from a traits perspective not to like with Mazi Smith.
They're built a little bit differently, but obviously from a profile standpoint, you know, the lack of production, the eye popping testing numbers or reported testing numbers in Mazi's case. But how do you compare him and Jordan Davis from a year ago?
I think Smith is a better kind of confined space mover, you know, more explosive. The player I thought of when I watched him, believe it or not, and I remember being on the field watching this player, you know, I thought of Dontari Poe coming out of Memphis.
Interesting, yeah. And Poe, he was a really good tester as well.
Yeah, and Poe was the 11th pick in the draft by the Chiefs. You know, obviously, he ran a 4.97 40, which was ridiculous. I was on
especially
the field.
At that time. No one was doing that at that time.
No, and I was on the field when he ran it, and I was like, and I didn't know the number because I was, you know, standing not far away, and I was thinking, wow, he's moving pretty good. Right. And then I found out it was a 4.97. And he weighed a little more, but he was another guy, as you recall, that was a big man with really light feet. See, I think that Jordan Davis has great sort of lateral speed when he can get going, and I think there are plays where Jordan Davis can dominate just with physical strength, but I don't think Jordan Davis has the kind of sort of quickness and reactive athleticism and change of direction that Mazi Smith has.
I'm going to make you feel old real quick here, Greg. I mean, that was over a decade ago.
It's okay. I am old, friend. Don't worry about it.
That was over a decade ago when you were watching Dontari Poe.
Are you serious?
That was 2012. That was the Fletcher Cox draft.
Oh, my God.
That was a while ago.
But Fran, at least I remembered it.
You do. Yeah, it was a crystal clear memory. I'm sure you know where you were at Lucas Oil Stadium for that one. Although that might have still been the RCA Dome at that point, right?
I think it was. I think it was.
The RCA Dome. Yeah. All right, let's get to our next position here. A couple linebackers, two guys that were at the Senior Bowl, and I think two guys that were probably talking more like day two at the linebacker position. Let's start with Washington State's Dyan Henley. Really interesting profile on Henley. Started his career at Nevada as a wide receiver and actually started games as a wide receiver for the Wolfpack. Just under 6'1", 225 pounds. He's got really good length. Made the move to linebacker after the 2018 season and really had his most productive year this year playing for Washington State. He was a finalist for the Butkus Award, first team All Pac-12, goes to the Senior Bowl, has a really good week down there in Mobile, goes to the Combine, was one of the best positional workouts and also had a pretty good athletic workout as well. What are your thoughts on Dyan Henley from Washington State?
Yeah, I really loved watching his tape. I mean, I'm probably going to end up watching another game or two, just another guy that I kind of like watching.
Nice.
This guy... First of all, one point I want to make. I think everybody assumes, because he doesn't have a lot of experience at linebacker, and I'd love to hear your thought, but everybody assumes that that means his play recognition is bad. It's not. Can it be better? Yes. But, you know, I didn't, in the amount that I've watched up to this point, and like I said, I'll probably end up watching more just because I want to, but I didn't think he was poor at key and diagnose. You know, I didn't think it was like, oh my God, what's he looking at? You know,
he is fast flow, but it's not like it doesn't look like he's guessing out there all the time.
No,
like, I don't think that he's like, you know, completely out of position a lot.
No. And just talking about his athletic traits, you know, he's got exceptionally long arms for a lineman. Yeah. But you know, I kind of was watching him and smiling because he's compact, he's sudden, he's supercharged. I mean, the plays this guy makes, and he's super competitive. He's got really good play speed. He's got range. His activity level, his energy level on every snap is really high. When he saw it, his trigger was exceedingly quick. I almost felt like he was sudden at times, like he just went, wow, look at this guy move. I really enjoyed watching him, and you would have to assume, Fran, given that he's only played 2 years as a full-time starter at linebacker, that he's only going to continue to get better.
What if I threw this comp at you? All right, I'm gonna knock your socks off.
Oh boy, here we go.
It just hit me as we're talking.
Well, wait, did this one happen when there was still indoor plumbing, or do I have to go back to the
1950s? No, not that far. But okay. It's not too long after Dontari Poe though. How would you compare him to Miles Jack? Coming out of UCLA, and I remember you and I having lots of conversations about Miles Jack. And the only reason I say this, okay, is that Miles Jack, he played all over the place for UCLA. It's funny. I was going to throw a stat at you, and I was like, because Diane Henley has actually returned 25 kicks in his career, 562 yards. He averaged nearly 23 yards a kick return. Which how many linebacker prospects do we say that about? And I was like, oh yeah, Miles Jack was one because he returned kicks at UCLA, returned punts, I believe too. But when you look at Henley, he's got that same level of fluid movement. Now, Miles Jack, everybody was talking about, is a top 10 pick. He fell a little bit due to the medical. He was an early two. Dion Henley, he's intriguing. He is a fun watch.
Ah, well, I don't know if I'd compare the two. Jack's a bigger man by a good 20 pounds. I thought Jack had great straight line speed. I think Henley is a little more dynamic in confined space.
He was too. Wow, Miles Jack was 245 coming out. My memory. 245
coming out. Yeah, he was a big man. And it's funny talking about a guy who hasn't played the position in Henley, very long. I thought he had a really kind of innate feel for how to use his long arms to maintain distance so he could keep his legs clean. I don't know what you thought, but that struck me. He didn't get caught up a lot.
No.
So I just thought that Henley. Look, maybe he's just one of those guys that has a feel for the position, but I really enjoyed watching his tape. There was a strong run and hit element to his game. He had that inside out, sideline to sideline, play speed and range. He was a fun watch. And like I said, you have to figure that he's only going to get better.
Another guy that I would put, I think he's in the same general area of the draft. And I think that a lot of the things you just said there about Henley, I think you say a lot of the same things about Dorian Williams from Tulane. Outstanding length, nearly 34-inch arms. I mean, he's got the length of a tackle. 4.49 speed, explosive athlete. That shows up on film. Greg, I've been watching this guy for a couple of years because he was second team all-conference as a sophomore back in 2020. So was doing him that offseason, just thinking this guy could be a guy that comes out as a junior. He ended up going back for his senior year, and I think better for it. He's a solid key and diagnosed player. He defeats blocks really well. He's got speed to make plays sideline to sideline. I'm interested to get your thoughts on Dorian Williams.
Well, I'll give you a name that he reminded me of when this guy came out.
Oh, okay.
And this guy came out of the 2015 NFL draft and became a starter right away. And in his second year in the league, had about 150 tackles, still in the league, has moved around a bit. But I remember really liking this guy coming out of college, and everybody said he was too small, and he's almost the same size as Williams.
Is it Quan Alexander?
You got it.
There you go. I love it.
You gave me
the context clues, and that led me down the path.
Yep, and I loved Quan Alexander, and he started right away with the Tampa Bay Bucks, and in his second year, 2016, I think, like I said, he had about 150 tackles. I mean, this guy, Dorian Williams, it was another fun watch. I mean, he's scraping flow, running hit, his quickness, athleticism. He's not weak, but I wouldn't say his game is built on strength and power. But he did play with physical toughness, taking on blocks. He did make plays, beating blocks to make tackles at the point of attack. Another guy, I think he'll be a starting linebacker, maybe not as a rookie. He'll be a special teams player, obviously. But I think eventually he'll end up being a starting linebacker in this league.
Yeah, he's just one of those guys where the more you watch, you're like, man, this kid, not only is he athletic, but he's just got a feel for kind of sifting through things and not getting stuck on blocks. We've talked about some linebackers so far this spring where that is something that pops up, but I don't think that's an issue with Dorian Williams. He's a fun stud.
I liked him. And as you said, he tested really, really well. And that arm length, almost 34, ran a 4.49. I mean, he's a really good athlete, and You know, I think that I also thought that he had excellent awareness as a zone coverage defender.
Oh, that's to me, no question. That was one of the areas I really liked about his game as well. Let's move to the next position, though, because I think with Brian Branch, the safety from Alabama, it's been kind of funny to follow his journey, right? Because a lot of people look at Brian Branch and on film, or I should say during the college football season, it was, oh, this kid's a top 15 pick all day. He's Nick Saban's star player in the middle of that defense. He's the guy. And then we get to the combine and he comes in at 190 pounds and he runs just below 4.6. And it's like, oh, like a guy that's that small, doesn't run that well, he's going to be in the second round. And now a few weeks removed from that, everyone's like, oh, wait a minute. Like, this guy's a really good football player. And now people are talking about him in the meat of round one again. So I want to get your thoughts on Brian Branch, the football player.
Yeah. I guess my question to you was this, you know, other than what you just said, and people can use that as negatives per se, I really didn't feel like there was a weakness in his game on film. You know, I mean, again, you know, 190, 4.58, 40, you know, those are obvious things to say that you'd like those things to be better. Okay. Yep. But I thought that if you're just looking at the way a guy plays football, I mean, the guy played slot corner, played safety. I think he's scheme versatile. He's just a really, really good player. And you know what really stood out to me, Fran, which is incredibly rare these days? He is a great tackler.
Greg, I got a stat. I'm getting ready to throw at you. I'm pretty sure, give me one second, I want to confirm one thing. I know that it's the case at the safety position. I just checked linebacker and it was the case. And I'm just going to check corner. And I'm going to say, okay, so he would be second. All right, so PFF has been charting college players now for a few years, right? And so they do all these guys, and it's not just like, oh, this is how they graded, but it's all the different metrics and all the different weight rates and everything. One of the stats they have, they chart missed tackles, and they do missed tackle percentage. Brian Branch, over the course of his career, a 2.3% missed tackle percentage. That is the best in this class at safety. It is the best of any safety drafted in the PFF era of charting guys, right? But not only that, it's better than any linebacker drafted in the PFF era of scouting. So Brian Branch, like, to your point that you just made, an outstanding tackler. This guy does not miss. So regardless of what his size, 5'11 and a half, 190 pounds, this guy plays close to the ball, spent a lot of time playing in the slot, playing in the trash, having to deal with all that. And he gets his guy to the ground every single time. And that's not even talking about what he does in coverage.
And he's phenomenal in coverage. I mean, you watch him in zone coverage. You know, it's those three words that we always hear. We hear coaches talk about all the time: alignment, assignment, technique. Guy's phenomenal. And he plays with his eyes about as well as you can play with your eyes. He sees everything. Great eye discipline. To me, and I don't know where he's going to get drafted, neither do you. But I think as an all-around player, he's one of the best prospects in this draft class. Now, we know he's not a top five pick. He's probably not a top 10 pick. But he is just a really, really good football player.
Yeah, I think he's fighting the uphill battle of like all the value. We talked about this last year with Kyle Hamilton, who a lot of people felt was a top five player at the position, and he fell to, what was it, 14 or 15 to the Baltimore Ravens. Kyle Hamilton had great production, looked the part, was tall, long, rangy, tested well. Brian Branch is fighting that safety narrative, but didn't run well and comes in smaller, right? So he's fighting a couple different narratives there, a little bit of a tighter needle to thread. But
that's a great point. You're 100% right. And I think coaches will love him. Now, then you get into those debates that every team has. You know, I'm sure teams are having meetings this week. A lot of teams, I think, including the Eagles, I believe, are having a lot of draft meetings this week so they can, get things said and see where they stand as we get closer to the draft. And I think you're going to he's one of those guys there's probably going to be a lot of conversation about because he's a great football player and coaches will love him. But then, a lot of scouts might say, but look at the measurables and who knows how it plays out. But the guy is just a really good player.
Let's talk through one more player here. Safety Sidney Brown from Illinois. Branch, he's a little bit short. He's under 5'10", but this kid is rocked up. He's 211 pounds. He's got a thick lower half. He's got pretty long arms for that size, and he tested well. He jumped out of the gym, broke 4.5 in the 40-yard dash, was extremely productive this year. He stuffed the stat sheet in a number of different ways in that talented Illinois secondary, Greg. What are your thoughts on Sidney Brown? How do you project him moving forward?
Yeah, he was an interesting guy to watch because unlike Branch, I don't think he's a great tackler. I mean, I think that he is a fast, straight-line line player. I was actually very surprised. I thought he did a very good job in man-to-man coverage versus tight ends, which kind of surprised me. Made a great interception. I forget who was against it. I think it was on the first play of the game. It might have been Michigan State. Did a good job against Sam Laporta of Iowa. You know, he played tight ends really well man-to-man. But, you know, I don't think he tackled really well near the line of scrimmage. I'm not sure exactly. You know, he's going to have to be a better tackler because we think about transition, Fran. What is he at the next level? There's a part of me that thought that he was kind of a dime safety, like an Adrian Phillips with the Patriots.
Yep.
You know, I kind of almost saw him that way when I was finished watching all the tape of Illinois games.
Yeah, and to your point, you know, going back to that missed tackle percentage metric, this past season, Sidney Brown's was 16.5%, which is a bad number, and that was the best of his career. He was at 17 last year. He was 19.1 the year before that. You know, I mean, that's just a consistent issue for him.
He just threw his body at runner receivers rather than squaring up with balance and body control. But look, he can run fast in a straight line. He's a little tight-hipped. I mean, he's a straight-line linear player. But as I said, he did cover tight ends well. But the question is, will that translate to the league at 5'10"? You know, can you match him up to quality tight ends in the NFL at 5'10"? I don't know the answer to that. I think it's a discussion that teams will be having. I'm not sure. I feel like I have a great answer for that. I don't know how you feel.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who's played a ton of ball, and I kind of projected them that same way. I actually did not write down Adrian Phillips, but that was kind of how I viewed his role moving forward into the NFL. I'm looking through my notes now, like matched routes really well in man-to-man coverage. I agreed with you there. Very powerful striker. He's got stopping power on contact, but the consistency there as a tackler just was not there. And he played very, very aggressive and borderline out of control at times. And I think that's a big part of it. So correct. Now the question is like, can you rein that in? And if you do rein that in, does that help him out a little bit from that standpoint? Like I said, he's played a lot of ball. There were actually, one of the other notes I wrote down, he was a really great disguise player. Like they use him a lot of different ways in that secondary. Yes. And I thought that he masked things really, really well pre-snap to post-snap. But he's a fun player, but there's certainly some issues we'll have to clean up.
I would agree. And they did have a great secondary, though. I actually like the kid, Jartavius Martin, a whole lot.
Yeah, another guy. Maybe we'll talk about Martin next week as we bring you back here for another edition of Pick 6. Greg, we're getting closer and closer to the NFL Draft. We'll let you get back to grind, and thanks again for joining us here on the Journey of the Draft podcast.
Thanks, Fran.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
All right, so again, great stuff there from Greg Cosell as we now welcome in Ben Fennell for some draft buzz here on the Journey of the Draft podcast. And Ben, you and I teased this last week, going through an exercise that we typically do every year. We're going to go position by position, try and find some of those quality values on day three of the draft, kind of based off some archetypes of players that are going off the board or likely to go off the board in round one. So every position, you're going to highlight a day one guy and then someone that's like him, the discount version, on day three, who could be a viable backup plan. And we'll start at quarterback, but this is a fun exercise that we go through every year.
It's a lot of fun, and some of it comes just from aesthetics, and you watch a lot of guys at one position. They start to remind you of other prospects you had watched, but they don't all have the same value. So why a guy goes on day one versus day three is part of the, you know, prospect report and diving into who these guys are. But there are players you get on day three that remind you of day one guys, but for whatever reason, and there's a variety of reasons, they fall in the draft. And starting with the quarterbacks and likely the first two picks going off the board and CJ Stroud and Bryce Young, there's some guys on day three that embody what they bring to a franchise. Starting with Bryce Young, how about a Jaren Hall out of BYU? Another short stature type of quarterback's going to operate mostly out of the shotgun at the next level and what he did on Saturdays, but they both protect the ball. They're fairly accurate into the intermediate and deep parts of the field. They're fairly mobile as well. They have put the ball on the ground quite a bit as rushers. I think a little bit is that slight frame and that, you know, not having the body armor, I think, on contact, but they're both guys that had great command of the offense and really embody the same type of quarterback style, I think, at the next level. So I could see Jaren Hall going and backing up Russell Wilson, or maybe going to the team that takes a Bryce Young. So and converting over to a CJ Stroud, I think Aiden O'Connell out of Purdue really embodies what CJ Stroud brings. You know, 6'3", 215-pound, prototypical pocket passer that's rhythmic, accurate, once again, to the intermediate deep parts of the field. Kind of a reluctant rusher. Keeps his eyes up and works within the pocket as long as they possibly can. And I just think he's a guy that's going to exhaust all his progressions and do everything he can to execute the play as designed. Maybe he doesn't give you a lot of that excitement and upside outside of structure, but that's kind of what C.J. Stroud also embodies.
Yeah, I love both of them. I really like the Jaren Hall and Bryce Young comparison as well. I think when you look at Jaren Hall, some of that playmaking dimension, you could squint and see some of that, certainly, of what Bryce Young brings to the table. And that's like Bryce Young's superpower.
And Jaren Hall barely ran around in 2021, scrambled much more this year. I think they gave him a green light to start using his legs and create a little bit more, and he showed it off. And kind of the same way that C.J. Stroud, I know we're talking different buckets here, showed off his ability as a runner late and in that Georgia game, Jaren Hall said, wait, I'm athletic. I can run around. I just wasn't, you know, really designed or programmed to do that. But if my team needs me to, you know, out of structure, I can do it, and showed it off this year.
I give you credit for starting a quarterback, because that is the toughest position to like draw comparisons to, and it's much easier as we get into the rest of these other positions. Let's go to running back, where, again, it gets a lot easier from a body type and skill set standpoint.
Well, I want to find someone that embodies Bijan Robinson later in the draft. And what is that? That's a hard-charging back through the tackles, yet elusive, you know, in short spaces, and elusive in the open field, and catches the ball fairly well. That's pretty much the package report. And I think that's going to be a Tank Bigsby. He's a guy that flies through the tackles with ferocity and physicality, explosiveness. Yet he could step through tackles of defensive backs. He could be elusive in space, showing off with his kickoff returns and his ability to operate kind of in open pastures as well. He's a guy that's also caught the ball fairly well, despite not being featured in the pass game, quite like, you know, Gibbs and, you know, Kenny McIntosh and Bijan Robinson were. But I think Tank Bigsby is going to go early day three and bring a lot of those same things, just not at that high level that Bijan Robinson is. And that's really what separates these day one guys from the day three guys, those elite traits, those elite abilities. But they're still good players on day three, and I think we all know that. We just need to find them.
Yeah, I think when you look at Bigsby, his ability to kind of create those missed tackles, right, force those missed tackles from defenders, that's something that Bijan does so well. And Bigsby, I've talked about that stat, like just like this exorbitant number in terms of like his percentage of yards coming after contact. I think
like he'll run through your face, Fran, but he's also got some shakiness in the open field too. It's a very dangerous mix.
And you wanted to see, like, oh, like, how does he catch the ball? Because he wasn't really necessarily asked to do that all that often at Auburn. And then he goes to the combine, and I thought he looked pretty good doing it in those positions.
And how many guys in your combine interviews over the years have mentioned Bigsby as the tough one in the SEC to face?
As a true freshman, he was getting that. Like, after his freshman year, I know I talked with, like, multiple defenders. Even, like, who was the Alabama linebacker that went to the Texans last year?
Christian Harris.
I remember talking with Christian Harris walking off the podium and him saying, like, yeah, I don't want to say this about an Auburn guy. I'm glad the microphone's on my face, but yeah, Tank Bigsby. Like, you know, he's that kind of player for sure. Let's go to wide receiver. Who do you got?
So what set up this conversation last week was our Zay Flowers to Liberty's DeMario Douglas. So we'll put that to bed. So I expect Jordan Addison to find his way in the back end of round one. And conversely, I think Marvin Mims at Oklahoma is one of the best downfield receivers I think I've ever studied, Fran. He is a guy that has serious explosive juice, knows how to win within the route and manipulate defenders, attack leverage, use his head, work to open space while manipulating defenders. Yet he'll go up and get it too, because we know every pass down the field is not exactly in the breadbasket. He'll catch some back shoulders. He'll make some adjustments. He'll compete and try to jump over defensive backs. And he's fairly slight. I think he's 175 pounds, maybe 5'10", but absolutely dangerous down the field, just like Jordan Addison. I don't know if Mims is going to find himself in the day two. I think he's going to be a huge run on corners, tight ends, that second wave of running backs, that second wave of edge rushers, any other potential developmental tackles, day two. Mims might find himself in the fourth, fifth round. I think that's okay. This is a guy that can definitely contribute right away, Fran. And one little asterisk, Quentin Johnston, big receiver, X receiver. You need one on day three? Grab Cedric Tillman out of Tennessee. He's a guy that's 220 pounds and can absolutely boogie and win for himself. Very much like a Quentin Johnston.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see like where Mims and Tillman go. Like to me, like I feel like teams are gonna feel good about those guys on day two.
That's the tough part of putting this together.
That's the thing is if those two guys fall to day three, like teams are getting good players, Mims and Tillman for sure. Let's go to tight end. Obviously, this is a loaded tight end group, so a lot of options for you on the table here.
Yeah, I think this has to be. Obviously, we assume Michael Mayer is going to go in that 20 to 35 range. Don't sleep on Sam Laporta. I think he does all of the same things, and he had for Iowa for the past 3 to 4 years. Great red zone target, third down chain mover, which was just behind Michael Mayer the past few seasons as far as tight ends and third down receptions. Tough athletes. I think that really is the number one thing on the reports. They are tough athletes. They are willing to do the dirty work. They are athletic, but they don't rely on it. They will beat you up in the release, the stem, the top of the route, and catch the pass with a corner on their back or a linebacker on their back. Yet they're competitive in the trenches too. I think Laporta is about an inch shorter, but similar type of 245, 250. I can block, I can be tough, I can move and be a threat in the pass game. I don't know if Laporta fits into day two. Another guy, you kind of think he's going to go in round three, but there's a chance some other guys leapfrog him in a deep tight end class. Could be guys like Tucker Kraft and Musgrave and guys like that going ahead of him. I think Laporta is going to be a round four guy, and just like a Jake Ferguson, Daniel Bellinger, all those other guys we see go on day three and end up being very vital pieces for their tight end rooms, I could see that happening.
I would say, like, if you were to present this and say, like, if you know Michael Mayer is going round one and you know Sam Laporta is going round four, who would you rather, like, the greater value without question is Sam Laporta. I think those guys are so close together. And to your point, I agree with you. Like, I think there's a decent chance that Mayer ends up off the board at the end of round one. And I think there's a decent chance Laporta falls into day three for all the reasons you mentioned. But the what those guys are going to bring to the table, how they project, the role they're going to play, their level of effectiveness – is going to be so similar. This is a perfect example of this exercise. Let's go offensive line. I left an O-line for you. It could be tackles, guard, center, whichever way you want to go.
Well, let's go with the sexy tackle here, Paris Johnson Jr., who's long, athletic, angular frame, special footwork. He's very, very light feet, typewriter feet for a tackle. There's some guys on day three that I think look exactly like him, but have some asterisks in the reports that make them day three players. I think that's Carter Warren out of Pitt for him. I think they are clones, you know, physically. Broad shoulders, angular frame, long wingspan. He has an over 84-inch wingspan, just like Paris Johnson. But he has the age factor. He's a much older prospect. He's a guy that obviously hasn't played as consistently as Paris Johnson either. And then that's Wanya Morris as well. Guy that's angular, long frame, huge wingspan, light feet. What's the asterisk of Wanya? He's a little dinged up right now. He's the one that tweaked his hamstring at the combine. Also pretty inconsistent tape, but he's a guy that needs to clean up some technique. Just like Carter Warren, these guys are very incredible, long, angular athletes. I think any offensive line room would love to get their hands on them. Paris is a little bit more consistent in how he gets it done. He's another guy that needs to work on some technique as well, but their special feet, angular frames, and very, very long profiles, it's a lot to like.
Carter Warren was one of my favorite tackles in the senior class coming into the season because of the light feet, his ability in pass pro, like all that was there. But to your point, like the technique, the aiming points, like everything in the run game just need to get better. And he actually said that was the reason why he went back to school for last season was to get better in the run game and get a little bit better there. And so to your point, I think that's a great, great comparison. Warren ended up missing a chunk of the year due to injury. And then, I think that hurt him. But I think when you look at Paris Johnson going to Carter Warren, a lot of comparables there between those two players on the left side. Let's go to defense now. Pass rusher, guys off the edge.
All right, two quick ones here in completely different profiles. Nolan Smith, 235-pound, light, loose, yet tough edge rusher. Well, go grab Nick Hampton at App State, who I think similar in that 235 frame. Not going to be for everybody, but all these five-man fronts across the NFL, going to stand him up at outside backer and let him be a sub rusher. That 235, 40-pound frame, though, he's a tough guy. He'll hold you up at the point of attack and will play with his hair on fire. And I've been wanting to find a guy that embodies a Tyree Wilson or Miles Murphy, that 275, 280 hulking defensive end that's going to play some 4-eye and some 3-tech for you. Grab Isaiah McGuire out of Missouri.
Yeah,
this guy did nothing for him. I remember watching you tape with you one day, and he was playing Broderick Jones. Man, he gave Broderick some trouble, some heavy hands. Not necessarily the most nuanced or technical player, but he's every bit of 285 and will go right through you with some power rushes, hold you up at the point, and play the run really well. Isaiah McGuire, he's a good football player, friend.
If Isaiah McGuire, four weeks from now, all right, so we'll say on May 6th, if he is not a San Francisco 49er, Houston Texan, or New York Jet, or Jacksonville Jaguar, I'll eat a shoe. Like, he is, like, a perfect fit for those teams that are just, like, have, like, these goblins off the edge that are just, like, big, long, powerful, and are just going to, on third down, like, we're going to put up four, like, bodies out there and run all different stunts, and we're going to, like, try and mash you. That's, like, McGuire all day.
Yeah, I thought I was also going to put Colby Wooden in there, who I think embodies the who's the guy that just went from the Houston to San Fran. He just took the deal to Charles Omenihu.
Charles Omenihu.
Similar type of guy. Kind of players. Yeah, perfect. Yep.
All day. All right, let's go to the interior guys. D tackle.
You know, Mazi Smith, Broderick Martin have a similar type of dancing panda profile at 325, defensive tackle, guy can play up and down the line with some quickness to get after the passer, and an undersized guy that embodies Kalijah Kancey. Is this DeSwan? Is that how you say?
DeSwan Johnson. I couldn't tell you.
DeSwan Johnson out of Toledo, who's a converted defensive end, slid him inside this year. He's like 6'1", 280, with absolutely explosive vertical first step, overwhelms interior offensive linemen and guards, just like Kancey with his quickness. This guy is an absolute terror getting after the passer, just a little bit undersized for your early down. So there's some guys that definitely embody Kancey and Mazi Smith. I think are going to find their way into the first round when it's all said and done. There's some day three guys that certainly look their part.
A really nicely done by you using the two players that we talked about with Greg earlier in the segment,
there we go.
To bring that full circle. Let's go linebacker. Who do you like here, day one compared to day three?
Well, Trenton Simpson, obviously, I think is the darling linebacker this cycle with his height, weight, length, speed, positional versatility, and just elite testing. And some guys that play those similar parts and similar roles on defense and are just a smidge behind the testing. I think that's like a Shaka Hayward at a Duke, who's a guy that was a special team stalwart, good in coverage, guy that played that halfway position for most of his career at Duke as a hybrid outside linebacker, nickel safety type of guy. But once he sees it, he goes from A to B. And then Ben Van Summeren out of Michigan State, who tested similar to Trenton Simpson, played a similar type of playmaking role out there in that nickel Sam position. And Trenton Simpson, I think, is going to have to figure out, is he going to be a Will at the next level? Is he going to be a safety at the next level? Is he a sub rusher at the next level? Well, Van Summeren, Shaka Hayward, at the very least, put him on special teams, put him in your sub packages, and let them be athletes.
I love that. You and I watched Van Summeren together as well. I remember when he was announced for the Shrine Bowl. We put that film on. Let's go now to the secondary. Let's go to corner.
So Joey Porter Jr., let's find him a Big Ten counterpart on day three. I think that's Corey Trice. And he's another guy I've heard some NFL area scouts that are very high on that might steal him in a day two. But I think he's a round four, round five guy, every bit of 6'3", who Joey Porter is a tall, long guy just as well. These are tough corners. These are corners that want to beat you up at the line of scrimmage, in the release, at the catch point. And it's a little clunky at times because of that. They don't play the ball particularly well, not a lot of ball production. But at the end of the day, they are big, they are physical, they're going to tackle for you, they're going to run support for you. They probably want their number called on some blitzes every now and then. They're just that type of physical presence corners out there at really good size. I think it was a week ago or 2 weeks ago, I said Joey Porter Jr. might end up being a safety in a few years. Corey Trice, he's a guy, his position may not be settled either, being every bit of 6'3", 200 pounds, and can run, but has some technique issues at corner. Similar type of things in their scouting reports.
You throw like South Carolina's Darius Rush into that conversation.
Yeah, that's
too.
A great one.
I feel like he had the same kind of bucket. Corey Trice from Purdue, I think, is a perfect kind of comparison there for Joey Porter Jr. Last one, let's go safety.
Now, this was probably the toughest to pick because I don't know if there is a day one safety. But I love Brian Branch, so let's just find a counterpart for Brian Branch. I think any team would love to take him. It's just a matter of the draft valuation for what he's going to do. Wasn't an elite tester, but a smart player, a tough player, guy that can play top down or in that nickel spot, who has a cornerback background, went with the corners at the combine. And Fran, this is a guy I think you've been high on for about a calendar year. I think that's LSU's Jay Ward.
Let's go.
That's another guy who came from the cornerback position, slid into nickel, and has no problem putting the boxing gloves on. This is a tough, feisty corner that wants to beat you up, loves to tackle and put his face in the fire, quick trigger to any perimeter action or, you know, sniffing out run action and getting his face into the box and contributing. He's a really tough guy. And also, didn't test, you know, super elite. I think he did have 11-foot broad, though. But he's a really good player. He's a tough player. And I just don't think LSU, their defense has really gone to plan the past few years. And he's in the same bucket, Fran, that I have like a Tank Bigsby. I think they were on dysfunctional sides of the ball. They were really good prospects. And I think those guys are eventually going to emerge as really good NFL players.
Yeah, I love that. And Jay Ward very easily could have been in that cornerback bucket. Javarius Owens could have been in that cornerback bucket coming up from Houston. Another one that I feel like kind of offers that kind of flexibility. There are a handful of these like safeties that have like either nickel flex or corner flex in this class. And opposite as well. You talked about like Joey Porter Jr. making the move. Yeah. Corey Trice potentially making the move. Like there's guys.
That's an overwhelming one to talk about because you go strong safeties, big box safeties, the free safeties. You want like a nickel. And then it's like who's a first rounder? This one obviously could have gone a lot of different directions.
You remember the days where it was like, hey, like, all right, it's free safety, strong safety, that's that. And then there was a point where it was like, hey, that everybody's interchangeable, it's not that. You know, you have it's like there's no such thing anymore as the box safety, right? That's the dinosaur. But now it's like it's so specialized and there's all these different packages that you now it's like there's like five or six different buckets and different player right. archetypes at that position.
It's like he's the sub package dime strong side quarter safety.
Right. It's like, okay, got it. All right. Very, very, you know, well-defined roles there on the back end. Let's now get to our mock draft roundup, Ben. And this is a good one. This is from Lance Zierlein from NFL Media. And this one caught a lot of fire, man. Like, it was just because it was so out of the outside the box, and like a lot of people like hate that with mock drafts for whatever reason. And this is like one of my biggest nits that I pick every single spring. People get so upset about mock drafts. People get so upset about, you know, like Chris Sims puts out a top five ranking, or Bucky Brooks puts out a top five ranking, and everyone's like clutching their pearls. How could you have player A ahead of player B and then next year or next spring when there's like, hey, we're gonna redraft. The 2022 NFL draft, that's like one of the highest clicked articles like on the internet that day, because everyone's like, oh yeah, like how could we have not seen that coming? Like, you have to understand, A, like there are going to be guys that go on day three of the draft that are going to be better than players on day one. You just highlighted a bunch of potential examples, right? And then number two is that everybody around the league, scouts, coaches, media, agents, everybody views all of these players in different ways. Like, people would be shocked at like, oh yeah, like I don't have CJ Stroud in my top three quarterbacks, or I don't have you know, insert tackle here, he's my number one tackle. And people are like, well, how could that be your number one guy? There are varying opinions all over the place, and I think in this draft in particular, I think there are going to be some shockers, man. I think there are going to be some really big surprises, and we'll see like how fast that happens, how early that stuff gets revealed to us. But look, this is Lance started off. Let's get into the top five here. He's got Bryce Young going number one to the Carolina Panthers. Like, and that's going against most mock drafts right now, right? Because most have it being CJ Stroud. So people would think, oh, well, all right, well, if they take Young, then CJ Stroud's obviously going to go to the Houston Texans, right? No, like Lance, who, by the way, is based in Houston, and you should listen to anything he says when it comes to the Houston Texans, says, no, I don't think they would take CJ Stroud here. I think they would go defense, and by the way, they're going to take the Texas Tech defensive end, Tyree Wilson. Will Anderson goes number three to Arizona. Baltimore trades up. They get CJ Stroud at number four, and then the Seahawks take Jalen Carter at number five. This is wild in terms of, like, teams and matching players and all that, Ben, but like this is the NFL draft, like this is how it goes.
Yeah, I'm completely with you. I think be ready for the unexpected this draft class, which the past few months there's been a lot of circles saying if you have a second round grade on someone this class, consider them in the first. So that just really opens up the prospect pool, especially in the first round, for some offbeat decisions and selections. And my one asterisk about the whole mock drafts and opinion think tank out there, don't just respect somebody's opinion after the information.
Yeah.
Don't evaluate the mock and say, I like the mock, therefore I respect his opinion. You have to go in before the information to say, do I respect Lance Zierlein? Do I want to hear what he has to say? And then you read what he has to say. So if you don't respect them, don't follow them. Don't read them. But if you do, you don't then get to say afterwards, wait a minute, I didn't really agree with that, therefore I don't respect his opinion. Make that declaration before the content. and make the decision to say whether you want to follow Chris Sims or not. You know, they may have some outlandish opinions, but it's theirs. And if you don't value what they have to say, don't follow them.
Very easy. It's a you would think pretty simple. But Ben, you and I, we like teased this week's segment last week on the show. I think I have an idea, basically, even just like off this discussion we've had here about this mock draft. I think next week we're going to do like a what is the series called on Disney Plus, the Marvel? It's like, what if? Like, all right, like, what if this happens instead of that? Like, the sliding doors moment of if the Carolina Panthers select Bryce Young instead of CJ Stroud, like, what could that mean for the rest of the top five or the rest of the top 10?
Now, the sliding doors, is that the reference to the movie?
Probably, yeah. I just
That's a sneaky good movie, Sliding Doors, where there's a critical moment, and then they show you the movie in two different aspects of what could have happened this way that way.
I just knew they. I knew like the
I think Gwyneth Paltrow's in. I think she comes home from work and finds her husband cheating on her. And then one of the instances, she hits a red light or has a hiccup, and then she doesn't catch him.
So like similar or dissimilar to Butterfly Effect with Ashton Kutcher, that was like the early.
Yeah, 2000s. It's in the same bucket.
All right, I like it. I had not seen Sliding Doors, but I know I saw Butterfly Effect in the theaters. All right, well, that said, let's go. I mean, really quickly, I don't want to like gloss over this. Tyree Wilson going number two to the Houston Texans. I think keep in mind, okay, D'Amico Ryan's the head coach. And if it comes down to Will Anderson, who, by the way, D'Amico is an Alabama alum. You would think he's got some ties there, right? So maybe he does go that way. But San Francisco, when D'Amico was there, what are we were just talking about, like, all the guys they had coming off the edge were, like, these big-bodied, like, long, powerful, like, pocket pushers. That's Wilson all day. Anderson's built a little bit differently than that. He's more of a smaller build. He may not be that kind of guy for D'Amico Ryans, and so that kind of pick would make sense. And Dale Jeremiah has said all through the spring, like, hey, there are teams out there that like Wilson more than Anderson, and don't be shocked if this happens.
Yeah, you know, it feels a lot like the Texans' decision of, like, Reggie Bush versus Mario Williams kind of thing. Yep. You know, and Tyree Wilson really embodies a Mario Williams type of presence, and D'Amico's going to want one-on-one butt kickers in there and guys that can play up and down the line and can feast and eat for themselves, and that's a great starting point for that franchise.
Yeah, and then look, CJ Stroud falls out of the top two. If he gets to number three, if he gets to number four, that creates to me like a potential feeding frenzy. Now, here in this situation, Baltimore moves up. They trade Lamar Jackson to the Colts, according to Lance here, and they are able to take CJ Stroud. But I think CJ Stroud falling out, that's where now like the Raiders get involved. Maybe that's the Titans. You know, you start talking about some of these other teams, and it really kind of gets interesting. And I look, all of this can then. Going through the sliding doors moments, right? All of this then can affect the Philadelphia Eagles at number 10. So it's really important to kind of pay attention what could happen here at the top. Because I don't think it's just as simple as, all right, well, it's definitely going to be Bryce Young and CJ Stroud 1-2 regardless of order. Like, that's not how it works, especially at the quarterback position. That said, let's get to the Eagles pick here at number 10. Peter Skoronski again. We talked about this last week here, Ben. This has become the very chic pick by a lot of media here. Peter Skoronski, and here's the blurb from Lance. Skoronski immediately steps into the right guard spot and offers swing tackle value if the Eagles need him to play outside at some point. So Skoronski, once again, I think this is the third week in a row that he was the pick here in the mock draft we're focusing on.
Yeah, I think that's the easy plug-and-play spot there. I think you'd probably compete with Cam Jurgens in camp for it. He's a guy that hasn't played over there, so it's a little bit of a little bit of a projection. I'm assuming there's going to be a bit of a learning curve, but Skoronski is a really smart player, and he's a guy that I think is going to be a cornerstone, versatile lineman for a number of years. So I like the pick. He may not need him for 2023, and that's okay.
All right, let's get to the guys going off the board in that area. Now, at number 7, Lance had the Houston Texans, who passed on quarterback at 2. Well, remember, they pick at 12. He had them trading back up into the top 10 with that 12th pick with the Raiders, and they select Will Levis from Kentucky there at number 7. The Atlanta Falcons at number 8, they take cornerback Christian Gonzalez from Oregon. Number 9, the Chicago Bears take Iowa defensive lineman Lucas Van Ness. You get to the Eagles pick at 10. Now we get to the Tennessee Titans at wide receiver Jaxon Smith-Njigba at 11 overall. The Las Vegas Raiders in that trade down with Houston, they take Tennessee tackle Darnell Wright. And then the Jets at number 13 take the Georgia left tackle Broderick Jones. So Ben, of those 6 picks, what's the most likely to happen? What do you feel like, oh yeah, like I could definitely see this happening here as we sit here on March or on April 6th?
Well, I think if the first 12 go off the board there, how they fall. I think the Jets taking Broderick Jones at 13 is a pretty safe bet.
So much smoke there, right?
No question. I think there's a lot of team connection. I think there's a lot of fit connection. And I think it's a team that wants to bolster the offensive line, particularly with that 13th overall pick.
For me, like, you know, one of the teams that had constantly been pegged for like a tackle spot all through January, February, March was the Tennessee Titans at 11. But then they go out, they sign Andre Dillard and give him like a starting contract money, right? And they sign some other pieces along the offensive line. So now people are like, oh, well, maybe they back off that a little bit. Wide receiver Jackson Smith and Jigba, like, makes sense. It's perfect sense for that's where the wide receiver run starts. In this draft, Mike Vrabel, an Ohio State guy, there's a lot of ties, not just with him, but with others on that coaching staff to Columbus. So Smith and Jigba ending up there in Tennessee, I think makes a lot of sense. You pair him with Traylon Burks, who you drafted in the first round a year ago, and you keep moving forward. I think that would be
I think the Titans at 11th pick and just what they're going to do in the next like month or two is one of the more fascinating teams. I have no idea what they think of themselves philosophically. They're a team that I think needs to revamp the offensive line, get bigger, get more physical if they're going to keep a Derrick Henry. And they go out and sign Diller. They sign Daniel Brunskill. They have an undersized guy, Brewer, at center. Dylan Radunz is kind of undersized. They don't embody that big, smashing team they used to have at Luan and Roger Saffold and big guys. And Ben Jones is gone. Derrick Henry's slated to make a lot of money. He could be on the move more than people think, I think, over the next couple of weeks leading up to draft. Could be a draft day type of trade as they want to kind of transition and get out of that contract and kind of move on to the next stage. And, you know, what do you do with Tannehill and then Malik Willis and the future of the quarterback spot? A lot of questions with that team.
Let's get to the next one here. The Eagles picking at number 30. They select a defensive lineman. They go with Georgia Tech's Keon White. Here's the blurb from Lance. White has the frame to take over inside for Fletcher Cox in the future, as well as the athleticism to be a big power end who can develop into a run stopper with rush ability. So, Ben, as we sit here at this point in the process, like there was a point where some people viewed Keon White. I know Daniel Jeremiah had him like in the top 10 of one of his big boards at one point, like that kind of elite kind of talent in this class. How do you view him as we sit here early April?
I think he's a heavy defensive end, probably for a 4-3 team, and slide in and give you some 4-eye, 3-tech stuff on, you know, sub-packages. This is a converted tight end. He's been doing nothing but putting on weight and weight and weight. I'm starting to think he's getting pretty maxed out. He's at 285. Remember, Fletcher Cox plays at about 310 or so. He's a guy that can play on the inside, you know, a considerable amount of snaps, you know, through the course of a game. Keon White, one of the comps I have is Milton Williams. Well, I think he's more of that inside-outside type than a true three-tech every down that, you know, Fletch is. I could slide in and play some 2-eye and some no-shade on occasion. So I think Keon White's a really interesting height, weight, speed athlete. But he's a guy I think I want to kind of keep in some open spaces and play off the edge a little bit more than you think. I think he's more of a Josh Sweat type of body than a Fletcher Cox type of body.
Yeah, you like him with that runway. He is a guy, though, like I liked him. He's cut from the same cloth to me as, like you mentioned, like Milton Williams, a Kentavious Street, who the Eagles just signed in free agency. I feel like he's that kind of like hybrid combo and tackle that teams can find a lot of value with here in today's NFL. So a really interesting player, and I'm excited to see where he ends up and how he's used moving forward to the league. The six players that went in that area, at 26, the Dallas Cowboys select wide receiver Quentin Johnson from TCU. At 27, the Minnesota Vikings, this was in a trade down, they take linebacker Drew Sanders from Arkansas. At 28, the Cincinnati Bengals, they take Oregon State tight end Luke Musgrave. At 29, the Saints, they take Pittsburgh defensive tackle Kalijah Kancey. And then at 31, the pick after the Eagles, we have Tennessee wide receiver Cedric Tillman. So, Ben, of those six, which one is the biggest surprise?
You know, I would have to go with Drew Sanders in there to the Vikings.
Me too, yeah, I agree.
I don't know if I saw him as a first-round pick, and I didn't see that being maybe the biggest need for the Vikings, as a team that is another live-wire team as far as what they think of themselves and their contending potential for 2023 and looking to the future. I think the long-term, short-term view of the Vikings is a really tough one to figure out. Some of these other picks I really like seeing Musgrave and a flex tight end to the Cincinnati Bengals. Kalijah Kancey to the Saints seems to be a sexy designer pick, as the Saints have always been willing to go with some defensive tackles that don't necessarily fit the prototype. And Cedric Tillman as a 4'4", 220-pound receiver, I can see Andy Reid having some fun with that guy as well. So Tillman, I know he's a guy I talked about as a day three type earlier. That's just the type of non-consensus a lot of these position groups, particularly the deep ones and ones that maybe aren't top heavy like receiver. Some of those later picks, any receiver you have in the 5 to 15 range can be completely different from board to board.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, you know, it's we talked about this earlier. Like, I just feel like in the top half of round one, you know, there's going to be like the Dante Whitner gets drafted at 8 overall by Buffalo, and everyone's like, whoa, I did not see that. Or the Tyson Alualu goes to the Jaguars at number 10. It's like, oh, I did not see that. Like, I feel like we're going to have a pick or two here in round one that kind of exemplifies that. Cole Strange last year by New England. Like, I think there's going to be some of those kind of surprises. I agreed with you with Drew Sanders. You know, you think about that defense now in Minnesota. You've got Brian Flores stepping in as the new defensive coordinator. It's going to be heavy man coverage, heavy blitz. They lost Eric Kendricks. They moved on from Kendricks, and I think there is a need there. But that one would surprise me a little bit. But I know that Lance loves Drew Sanders, so I think my guess is he's trying to find a spot for him there just to continue to show him love, because I know he's a big fan.
And really not that different from like the Anthony Barr type of role, a guy that's probably going to play off ball on first two downs and then be a sub rusher.
I like that. That's a really good point. Most interesting trade in this mock draft. We kind of referenced it earlier, like Houston trading back up into the top 10. But that's the thing, you have to kind of remember, like when you have two picks in the top 12, like especially if they have the ability to trade out of two, it wouldn't shock me if they're like, all right, we get a little bit of assets back. They already have a boatload of picks this year. I know they've got more that I think they're hoping for next year as well. They've got more coming back from Cleveland next year. So they've got plenty of assets. If they want to move around and trade back up, would not shock me. Obviously, moving up for Levis will be a highly debated pick, but that's going to be an interesting one.
Yeah, I mean, the first hour of the draft for Texans fans, I mean, have some antacid ready, have a bottle of liquor ready. That's going to be a roller coaster of emotion. Maybe some highs, some lows. Hopefully, you don't break the TV after the first 10 minutes, and then you'll stream it the next hour. It's going to be a lot going on for the very, very pivotal and crucial first hour of the draft for the Houston Texans franchise.
All right, let's go now.
No, but my most interesting trade, that would be Buffalo sneaking up a couple spots in a trade with the Vikings to get Bijan, who I think has been a sexy designer pick for the Bills, sitting there at 27. Lance has them going up to get him a few spots. So I love them adding Bijan to that offense. We'll see if they feel like they need to go get him.
Yeah, get ahead of the Dallas Cowboys, a couple other teams that have been rumored there potentially for Bijan Robinson. Makes sense. Last one here, favorite player and team fit. For me, I really like Deontay Banks going to the Pittsburgh Steelers there in the meat of round one. You know, it's a new general manager, obviously, but the same general brain trust there in Pittsburgh. And, you know, they've trended more towards like highly athletic defenders over these last few years, and Banks certainly brings that. Also, I've got to keep in mind like the Maryland connection. Mike Tomlin, his son, played for Maryland for a few years there, so a former teammate there of Deontay Banks. It feels like every year they add a terp or two via the draft or undrafted free agency, and Banks would be just next in line.
Yeah, and I think this team has a big old hole at this spot and would be a great fit, not only for look, feel, aesthetic, need, everything. Darnell Wright to the Raiders. I think he'd be a great right tackle addition to them. I think they have a Lumineer right now. I think they have Thayer Munford or somebody over there as well to compete. I know they want to get more athletic across that line. They did last year with Dylan Parnum. I think they re-signed Colton Miller as well. If you can add a Darnell Wright there, keep Jimmy G upright for another season or two. Darnell Wright looks like he's going to be a starting caliber right tackle day one.
I love it. Well, it's a lot to cover. Great stuff there from Lance Erline in that mock draft. We'll do another mock next week. And Ben, I think we will do those what-if segments here next week. That'll be a fun one next week right here on the Journey of the Draft podcast.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
All right, great stuff there from Ben. Let's now answer a question from one of you at home in our draft mailbag. And again, the best way to reach us in our draft mailbag, head on over to Apple Podcasts, leave us a question in the comment box. It could be a mock draft you want us to break down, player rankings, or a question about a specific prospect or a group of prospects. Matt ESQ left a 5-star review with the question, I really like Zach Pascal here in Philadelphia, but what is your opinion on replacing him with a mid to late round tight end who can block and catch a little bit? I think, look, you can just certainly fill that role with like a tight end who can block or a tight end who can catch or wide receivers that can block that power slot role. There's a lot of crossover between those two kind of positions. And I think when you look at wide receiver, three names that come to mind right off the bat. Michael Wilson from Stanford, honestly reminded me a lot of Zach Pascal, especially coming out of Old Dominion. Wilson is probably in the middle rounds just due to injury. I think he's a guy from Stanford to keep an eye on. Xavier Hutchinson from Iowa State, I think checks a lot of those boxes. He's a guy that I've talked about a number of times here on the show. Love the way he gets after it as a blocker, but then also does a lot of the little things well in terms of like getting open and catching the football too. I mean, pretty important things at the wide receiver position. And then Jonathan Mingo from Ole Miss. He's a guy that I think you can kind of plug into the slot. He could be an inside receiver and do some of the dirty work for you as well. If you do want to go to the tight end route, I would say like Braden Willis from Oklahoma. He's got kind of a little bit of a hybrid skill set. He's built like a Trey Burton type, but he can line up all across the formation. He could be a fullback. He can line up in line. He could be a wing and be as a movement piece there in the run game. And then another guy who honestly was a wide receiver at Stanford, but can make the move to tight end, and that's Elijah Higgins. And I think you can ask him to do a lot of those same things working in the middle of the field. So three receivers, two tight ends. Matt, hope that answered your question. Thanks so much for the five-star review. Thanks for the question. And thanks to Ben. Thanks to Greg. We'll be back later next week. We've got Dane Brugler back once again. We'll talk through probably the release of the Beast next week here on the show, and also get through offensive line. We're going to be doing offensive line rankings next week right here on the Journey to the Draft podcast.